Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we are going to... hang on one second, folks.
We're
going
to bring you some news, and then we'll bring you an interview with John McManus. John McManus is president of the John Birch Society. He's just back from Arizona. He's going to comment on the conditions out there with... the reasons for the governor of Arizona, why she wants that law in place that checks the flow of illegal aliens into her state. Arizona has a huge border with Mexico that's undefended. They've asked the federal government for help for a long, long time. No help has come. So they decided to take matters into their own hands, and John's going to comment on that, and he will also comment on other issues that are dear to the heart of the John Birch Society. They're a real states' rights organization and very independent, so you may or may not agree with them. Some of the things I agree with them, some of the things I don't, but at least he makes a good argument for his causes. You know, he deserves to be heard. And I think you ought to listen to him and make up your own mind. What do you think? What do you believe is the right thing to do?
Yeah. So, anyway, we do have that coming up.
In the meantime, we're going to bring you some news.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Leo.
The Disappearing Act, $8.7 billion of Iraq development money missing. The Defense Department is unable to account for $8.7 billion of the $9.1 billion in development fund for, almost 100% of the development fund for Iraqi monies it received for reconstruction in Iraq, reported Federal News Radio today. A special inspector general for Iraq Construction issued a report today that claims a weakness in the DOD's financial and management controls left it unable to properly account for $8.7 billion of the $9.1 billion in DFI funds. The money vanished because most DOD organizations receiving DFI funds did not establish the required Department of Treasury accounts, and no DOD organization has designated as the executive agent for managing the use of DFI funds, explains the Inspector General. The breakdown in controls left the funds vulnerable to inappropriate uses and undetected loss. God.
This has been going on since we first went in.
Yeah, nobody set this up.
You know,
so
it was Kellogg, Brown, and Root was siphoning off money.
Everybody.
Halliburton was siphoning off money. People who were bringing in money were siphoning off money.
Yeah.
People were taking out money were siphoning off money.
I remember reading back, I don't know, maybe a few years ago, all the money that, we read it on this show, if I remember.
All the money and artifacts that were stolen.
But all the money... that with all this cash that had come in, and the soldiers were playing football with it. They were kicking it around. There were just big, huge amounts of cash that nobody was accounting for. DFI revenues generated from the export sales of petroleum products, and natural gas from Iraq, and the surplus funds from the United Nations Oil for Food Program, as well as frozen Iraqi assets, according to SIGAR. If you believe the money was simply lost through shoddy accounting practices, you may also be interested in a bridge I have for sale in Brooklyn. Simply put, the money was pilfered. Man, $8.7 billion just stolen right out of nowhere. Isn't that?
It's graceful.
Yeah.
So that's just...
And it says, you may recall when Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld's admission on September 10th, 2001... the Pentagon lost $2.3 trillion. I remember that. And this money was supposed to go for our national defense against CIA assets like Osama bin Laden and tin horn dictators like Saddam Hussein and the mental case of Kim Jong-il. I became a non-story of little interest the next day when cave Muslims violated the laws of physics and supposedly attacked us for freedom. This now basically resides in the corporate media memory hole. $2.3 trillion amounts to $8 million for every man, woman, and child in America.
That's where our tax money goes, folks.
Yeah.
Aren't you happy? What a great government.
Isn't it great? It says nobody knows exactly where the $2.3 trillion went. But some think it was siphoned off through companies like Dynacor, AMS, Lockheed Martin, which control the bookkeeping for federal agencies, where fraud is rampant. Unchecked and very lucrative for corporate and government insiders, writes Yuri Delbenko. The fraud is so egregious, in fact, that the sovereignty of the nation itself can be questioned when bogus accounting systems can mask the revenue streams and expenditures of federal agencies to such an extent. At the time the money disappeared, Adav Zakim was the controller of the Pentagon. In addition to serving as a member of the notorious Project for a New American Century, Zakim was chummy with the military-industrial merchants of death complex. He was an executive at the System Planning Corporation, a defense contractor specializing in electronic warfare technologies, including remote control aircraft systems.
Drones.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
Fraud and thievery is rampant in Iraq. In June, it was reported that tens of millions of dollars in federal money, property, went missing or unaccounted for at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. A report from the State Department revealed that 159 of the embassy's 1,168 vehicles worth $18.5 million are unaccounted for and face nearly $270,000 per year in charges for more than 2,000 cell phones that have not been registered to authorized users, according to the Associated Press.
Stupid.
Money slotted for Iraq development rebuilding with the Pentagon destroyed as a
funny way of disappearing.
Disappearing.
Between April 2003 and June 2004, $12 billion in U.S. currency was shipped from the Federal Reserve to Baghdad. More than 9 million went missing. The simple truth about missing money is the same one that applies to much else about the American occupation of Iraq. The U.S. government never did care about accounting for those Iraqi billions, and it doesn't care now. It cares only about ensuring that an accounting does not occur. Right, Donald L. Bartlett?
And James B. Steele for Vanity Fair.
Yeah. Grilled by the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, the former administrator of the Coalition Provincial Authority, Paul Bremer, told Representative Harry Waxman that if the cash had gone to ghost employees, he would have known about it. Bremer sheepishly told Representative Dennis Kucinich he had no idea where the money went. Instead of launching a criminal investigation and tracking down the thieves, the SIGIR study suggests the Secretary of Defense create new accounting and reporting procedures to avoid such, I put a parenthesis around that, mistakes in the future. It also recommends designating an executive agent to oversee progress, establishing measurable milestones, and determining whether any DOD organizations are still holding DFI funds. In other words, the solution is to have the same pack of wolves watch over the chicken coop. That's
amazing.
Great.
Why don't we
put that on, that audio?
Yeah, okay, I got a 2-3 minute audio here, so you can check.
Account for 25% of what it spends.
Donald Rumsfeld declared war, not on foreign terrorists.
The adversary is closer to home. It's the Pentagon bureaucracy.
He said money wasted by the military poses a serious threat.
In fact, it could be said that it's a matter of life and death.
Rumsfeld promised change, but the next day, the world changed. And in the rush to fund the war on terrorism, the war on waste seems to have been forgotten.
My 2003 budget calls for more than
$48 billion in new defense spending. More money for the Pentagon when its own auditors admit the military cannot account for 25% of what it already spends.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
$2.3 trillion, with a T. That's $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. To understand how the Pentagon can lose track of trillions, consider the case of one military accountant who tried to find out what happened to a mere $300 million.
We know it's gone, but we don't know what they spent it on.
Jim Minnery, a former Marine turned whistleblower, is risking his job by speaking out for the first time about the millions he noticed were missing from one defense agency's balance sheets. Minnery tried to follow the money trail, even crisscrossing the country looking for records.
The director looked at me and he says, "Why do you care about this stuff?" It took me aback, you know. My supervisor asked me why I care about doing a good job. So.
He was reassigned and says officials then covered up the problem by just writing it off.
They got to cover it up. That's where the corruption comes in. They got to cover up the fact that they can't do the job.
The Pentagon's inspector general partially substantiated several of Minnery's allegations, but could not prove officials tried to manipulate the financial statements. 20 years ago, Pentagon employee Franklin C. Spinney made headlines exposing what he calls the accounting games. He's still there, and although he does not speak for the Pentagon, he believes the problem has gotten worse.
Those numbers are pie in the sky. The books are cooked routinely, year after year after year.
Retired Vice Admiral Jack Shanahan commanded the Navy's Second Fleet the first time Donald Rumsfeld served as defense secretary.
With good financial oversight, we could find $48 billion in loose change in that building without having to hit the taxpayers.
In the 2.5 minutes since this report began, the Pentagon has spent nearly $2 million, and it may never know where 25% of those tax dollars went. In Los Angeles, I'm Vince Gonzalez for Eye on America.
Yeah, so that's that shakes you up a little bit, doesn't it? Yeah. Man. Oh, this is good. Massachusetts schools are giving first grade children condoms.
Yeah.
Why exactly?
Copying the pedophile model, Massachusetts schools are giving first grade children condoms, violating parental protections. In 1977, pedophile Childhood Sensuality Circle published a child sexual bill of rights, truly a pedophile's bill of rights. CSC pedophile rights, every child has the right to a loving relationship, including sexual with a parent, sibling, or other responsible adult or child, shall be protected and aided in doing so by contraceptives and aids to prevent venereal disease, and schools copy the pedophile model, which leads one to cynically ask which closet pedophile run Massachusetts sex education.
Hmm. Good question. One second, we will answer that.
CSC pedophiles want kitty condoms and contraception like modern STD vaccines, not to protect children from harm, but to protect pedophiles from disease and evidence of assault, like impregnating minors and thus from jail. And same age and sex, same gender sex opens the door to disparate age with sex with hetero or homosexual adults. CSC pedophiles write children are sexual at any age, frustrated, antisocial, and potential criminals without sex. CSC pedophiles demand sex re-education of the citizenry in every part of the United States.
School child or adult, school copy the pedophile model. CSC pedophile rights, pedophiles' rights, sexual rights should be legalized regardless of age, and schools copy the pedophile model. CSC.
Let's jump down here.
Yeah,
the recent.
In short, Massachusetts and similar schools have adopted Kinsey's pedophile programs, neutering parents and suggesting an organized pedophile state and school lobby. Tiny condoms and child STD vaccines
wound children and expose them to a lifetime of physical and emotional trauma, but they do protect child predators. The recent Provincetown decision to pander to pedophiles by by eroticizing even first grade students with kiddie condoms is reportedly already school policy in over two dozen Massachusetts school districts. Since the late 1960s, children have been eroticized and their innocence bludgeoned by sexually deviant and or foolish school officials. However, the press reports Massachusetts is a kiddie condom pioneer. In 1990, its Cambridge Ridge and Latin School Health Center dispersed condoms, and by 1991, Falmouth had condom vending machines in school bathrooms. Since smaller kiddies often cannot read at night, do school nurses provide the safest sex demonstration of orifices to use and how with the cute rubber balloons? As Massachusetts pushes lesbian, gay, transgender, and undecided rights groups, old or young, kiddie condom experimental opportunities are legion.
Is condom erotic play explored in the playground or at lunchtime after eating peanuts and jelly sandwiches? Are condoms for the cloakrooms? Do children get extra physical education credit for sex? Do girls get equal access to dental dams? Can Massachusetts students submit erotic films or papers for credit? What is the protocol? So much to learn. Massachusetts Democrat Governor, the school sex programs recalled Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, when a little boy was sent for therapy when he didn't play erotic games with others. A Massachusetts Democratic Governor, Deval Patrick, protested to Provincetown School Superintendent Beth Singer. He is running for re-election. Comrade Singer explained to the press that the intent is to protect kids. We know that sexual experimentation is not limited to an age, so how does one put an age on it? How indeed is Singer invested in kiddie condoms? Britain's male online extra small condoms for boys as young as 12 could soon be on our shelves. The hot shot condoms are going on sale in Switzerland. Huxley would ask who profits from baby condoms? The answer is certainly not children. As noted, pedophiles have always advocated safe school sex ed condoms and STD vaccines for their tiny victims. So watch for hotshot kiddie condoms coming to a school near you. And when they distribute Barbie dental dams, ask who's benefiting from eroticizing children, as demanded by the pedophile lobby. And, of course, I say, sue these schools top to bottom. That was written by Dr. Judith Wiseman, author of the book Sexual Sabotage. Fascinating, huh? I didn't know that. I've worked in the Massachusetts schools as,
they're talking about some school districts.
I know. Can you imagine those districts?
Provincetown is down in Cape Cod.
They're sickos. Sorry, folks. I just kind of screwed up here. That's right. Provincetown is Cape Cod. That's pretty sick, though.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that hasn't been reported before. You haven't heard anything about that.
Queen Elizabeth, what does it say about her?
Fronts for Rothschild's crown.
It is accurate to posit that Australia, New Zealand, and Canada are not independent sovereign countries. However, these nations are not owned and run by the UK. They are owned and run by the House of Windsor Crown Temple Syndicate within the City of London Corporation. The head signatory of the Crown Temple Syndicate is Elizabeth Windsor, Queen Elizabeth II of England. It should not be forgotten that the most powerful financial syndicate in the Western world is that of the European Rothschilds. The Rothschilds, because their power base inside the City of London Corporation, have a controlling membership of the London Crown Temple Syndicate. They also have executive control of the Vatican and the Mafia through the P2 Masonic Lodge in Italy. The financial affairs of the new UK coalition government in London are also Rothschild-controlled. The line management here is understood to be Jacob Rothschild, Nathaniel Rothschild,
NM Rothschild and Sons Limited, Newport.
Quiven Lane, London.
Right. And
Oliver George. Litwin, George Osborne.
So on and so forth.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Windsor and her covert syndicate in London.
No, Queen Elizabeth II fronts for the Rothschild. She is the largest landowner on earth. She is the head of state of the United Kingdom and of 31 other states and territories.
And is the legal owner of 6,600 acres of land, 1/6 of the earth's land surface. A conservative estimate of the value of the Crown Temple Syndicate landholding under the Queen's signature is $17.6 trillion, or pounds. The Queen's Syndicate landholdings are based on the laws of the country she owns, and her land title is valid in each of those countries. Her main holdings are Canada, the second largest country on earth, with 2.4767 million.
2,467 million.
Yeah, it's actually
2 million.
2.467 billion. Australia, the seventh largest on earth, with 1,900 million acres, and New Guinea with
114.
New Zealand with 66 million, and UK with 60 million acres. Elizabeth Windsor and her covert syndicate in London are the world's largest landowners by a significant margin. The next largest owners is the Russian state, and an overall ownership of 4,219 million acres, and a direct ownership comparable with the Queen's holding of 2.447 million acres. Third largest owner is the Chinese state. Okay,
which claims
largest,
all of Chinese land.
Right. And the fourth largest owner on Earth is often said to be the federal government of the United States, which owns about 1/3 of the land area of the USA, 760 million acres. However, the Washington, D.C. private corporation, federal estate, is
actually
owned and controlled by the London Crown Temple. What? Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
So we are...
Indeed, at the present time, the London Syndicate, in partnership with an old family Chinese syndicate, hold and have activated $47 trillion world court writ of execution and lien on the U.S. Treasury and the U.S. Federal Reserve Board.
The five largest personal landowners on earth at present are Queen Elizabeth, King Abdullah, King of Arabia, King Balibo of Thailand,
Bumble.
And King Mohammed
the Fourth
of Morocco, and Sultan Qaboos. And in reality, however, these named individuals are just the head signatures of old blood syndicates that act corporately through hidden family trusts. Interesting.
So, folks, let's read that again. There's been a world court writ of execution and lien on the U.S. Treasury and the U.S. Federal Reserve Board. The London Syndicate, in partnership with an old family Chinese syndicate, hold and have activated a $47 trillion world court writ of execution and lien on the U.S. Treasury and the U.S. Federal Reserve Board. What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't really know. This seems like we're,
in hock to the Rothschilds and Queen Elizabeth?
That's what it looks like.
And the Chinese?
That's what it looks like. I guess. For $47 trillion.
That's why BP can come in and rape our country.
And do whatever
and have
they
no
want.
Consequence. Or minimum consequence.
Maybe. Kind of a sick deal. But anyway. What's this? Renz and Debbie. Communitarianism and NAFTA. Check this out.
Yeah, collecting rainwater is now illegal in many states as big government claims ownership over our water.
Oh. As bizarre as it sounds, laws restricting property owners from diverting water that falls on their own ground and land.
On their homes and land.
Yeah, okay.
Have been on the book for quite some time in many Western states. Only recently, as droughts and renewed interest in water conservation methods have become more common, have individuals and business owners started butting heads with law enforcement over the practice of collecting rainwater for personal use.
Jeez. Check out this YouTube. There's a YouTube video here, I guess. A new report out of Salt Lake City, Utah, about the issue. It's illegal in Utah to divert rainwater without a valid water right, and Mark Miller of Mark Miller Toyota found this out the hard way.
Go right there to that blue thing. We might...
Yeah, I can check this out.
See if there's a video.
It's supposed to be on.
There it is.
Okay.
Yoga students, learn how to double your flexibility in just 28 days. Click the orange button now.
That's not chemtrails.
But that's an excellent one, I'm sure. It shows chemtrails.
I've seen that one already. It just...
Who owns the rain? Turns out, not you. You're actually breaking the law if you try to capture rain falling under your roof and pour it on your flower bed.
A prominent Utah car dealer found that out when he tried to do something good for the environment. John Olivehurst has the surprising story.
Rebecca Nelson captures rainwater in a barrel, and she pours it on her plants.
We can fill up a barrel in one rainstorm, so it seems a waste to let it just fall onto the gravel.
Car dealer Mark Miller wanted to do pretty much the same thing on a bigger scale. He collects rainwater on the roof of his new building, stores it in a cistern, and hopes to clean cars with it in a new water-efficient car wash. But without a valid water right, state officials say he can't legally divert rainwater.
I was surprised. We thought it was... our water.
State officials say it's an old legal concept to protect people who do have water rights.
Obviously, if you use the water upstream, it won't be there for the person to use it downstream.
Utah's the second driest state in the nation. Our laws probably ought to catch up to that.
So what about the little guy watering with rainwater at home? Will anybody do anything about that violation of the law?
If she really does do that, then she ought to have a water right to do it.
Are you going to make an issue out of that?
No, we have bigger fish to fry.
After months of discussion, city and state officials worked out a tentative compromise with the bigger fish, Mark Miller Toyota.
He would basically be using a Salt Lake City water right and diverting it under our name.
Small fish are off the hook for now. The state has no plans to go after them. John Hollenhorst, Eyewitness News, Salt Lake City.
State officials say the Mark Miller agreement could become a blueprint for other rainwater projects. Homeowner projects, although technically illegal, are likely to stay off the state radar screen. So if raindrops fall on your head, you probably
you better get
do
rid
it
of them.
You want.
Oh, man.
Who owns
the rain? I think that's a misinterpretation of the water rights center.
I think so, too. But it also sounds like... Well, you know, Utah still has bigamy and polygamy. So
we should get ready for our interview. With
yeah,
John
we will.
Right
but Utah's kind of a wacko state.
Mm-hmm.
So besides being the driest state in the country, I guess. You know, it's also owned, I think three quarters of Utah is owned by the federal government.
I mean, I did know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's.
We're queuing up our interview with John McManus. Be patient just a minute, and we'll start it. I think it's pretty informative, and I don't know exactly what Leo's doing. I don't know why it's not in. He's going to turn the button on in just a second. He's having trouble with it. Let's hope he can activate this, because it was a good interview, and John just had a lot of information
to offer. Local police in Arizona and California
reminder about La Zeta violence along the border. The violence will spill over the Mexican border into the United States. That's almost at the end, that article, so don't go too far ahead, Leo. It should be done now.
We're hoping that it is. This is a reading of the...
A little more, and we should be...
Yeah, as soon as that comes up, while it's finished there, we will go to the next. Vitamin D and prevention of chronic diseases.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's an hour long.
Wow.
I think I'll pass on that. Let's see. Europe freezes out Goldman Sachs.
Huh.
Want to read that?
Go ahead.
European governments are turning their backs on Goldman Sachs, the all-conquering investment bank that has suffered a series of blows to its reputation, capped by the biggest ever fine imposed on a Wall Street firm.
According to data from Dealogic, Greece, Spain, and France and Italy have all denied the bank a lead role in their recent sovereign bond sales. Last Thursday, Goldman agreed to pay $550 million fine to settle U.S. regulators' claims that the bank misled investors in mortgage-backed security. Goldman admitted that its marketing materials were incomplete because they failed to state that the same third party that helped choose the assets had taken a bet against them. That's good to know. Congressman Mark Kirk, accomplishments of a... Let's see, he's an AIPAC supporter. Congressman Kirk led the bipartisan effort to secure Eye in the Sky, a real-time satellite early warning data for the state of Israel. With access to Eyes in the Sky, Israel's warning time of Iranian missile launch grew from less than 1 minute to a full 11 minutes. In 2008, Kirk led a bipartisan effort to deploy the X-band AN/TPY-2 radar system to Israel. The radar, America's most advanced system, doubled Israel's intercept range, giving the Jewish state at least two engagement windows to bring down an Iranian salvo. Earlier last year, Kirk helped reverse the administration's cuts to Israel's Arrow 3 upper-tier missile defense system, securing full funding for the program to continue. Why he's so pro-Israel with all these weapons. I think we're all set now.
Yeah, we're all set.
Okay.
We have John McManus, president of the John Birch Society, and we'll be talking about we'll be talking about Arizona and the Arizona
other John Birch issues.
Number of conservative issues. So hopefully this will play out well. Hello, John. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, good.
Oh, good evening, John. How are you? It's Lila.
Okay, I'm doing fine. I hope you folks are doing as well.
Yeah.
We are. It's cooled off a little bit up here in New England, so we had a gorgeous day. So we're doing very well. I heard you've been doing a lot of speaking and traveling, and then you were out in Arizona.
Well, I've been all over the country. I started right after Easter, and I've been in close to 50 cities all over the nation.
Wow.
Wow.
Stops was in Arizona, in Phoenix.
So,
The people down there are pretty determined. They're going to stick with this the law that's been passed. They're happy about it.
I heard tonight that I guess the judge is going to be ruling on it tomorrow.
Supposed to take effect on Thursdays. They when they passed the law, they said it won't take effect until July 29, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal judges, Arizona's been trying to get help from the federal government and trying, and so finally they just gave up and they said, okay, well we got to do something ourselves. And the response then is that the federal government goes and sues them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was really surprised because, I mean, she went down to, she actually had a meeting with Obama. I remember that, what, about a month or so ago. And, you know, a sit-down meeting with him in Washington. And I remember her coming out of that and kind of like, you know, not knowing what took place. But, and then all of a sudden they decide to sue her.
Well, it's, you know, the people don't do these things down in Washington, many of them. They don't do things because it's right or it's wrong or something. They do it for political purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama is trying to protect his left flank by going ahead and suing Arizona. In a way, I'm somewhat glad that he's done it because it's going to turn out to be a states' rights issue.
Yeah.
And if states' rights wins out, then there's going to be a lot more states' rights claims and states' rights demands, which I think would be good for the country.
Well, so what is the general feeling of the people of Arizona about this law, the people that you spoke to?
The people that I spoke to are all in favor of the law,
mm-hmm.
very much so. I don't know, did you hear about the guy with the basketball team and the shirt?
No.
No.
All right, well, this fellow's a 35-year veteran of the Bird Society, and he's a good friend of mine. He's also a big fan of the Phoenix Suns basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, way back months ago, the Phoenix Suns showed out one night. They came out, and their uniforms were different. It said Los Suns, in other words, Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. So somebody in the Phoenix Suns organization decided to have solidarity with the people who are opposing the law, so they put it in Spanish on the shirts. So the next game, my friend, he and his buddy show up with their own shirts, and their shirts said, Viva Los 1070. 1070 being the number of the law.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, the second period of the game, the security people came over and told him he had to take his shirt off, and he said, no. Well, you have to turn it inside out. He said, no. He said, well, you have to come with me. Where are we going? Well, we have to go downstairs behind the stands. We have to talk about this. So they got down behind the stands, and my friend says to the security guy, he said, do you have any idea how much trouble you're about to cause yourself? In other words, I'm not going to stand it.
Right.
So they jawed for a little bit. They went back to their seats, people around them cheering. They sat there, and that night the president of the team called my friend at his home, apologized, and said, you've got 4 free tickets for the next 10 games.
There
wow.
you go. Yeah.
Right?
He stood up for himself, I guess. Yeah.
Do they still have the Lost Suns on the shirts?
They never worn those shirts again.
Oh, they haven't?
No.
Hmm.
So
that says something.
I said to my friend, I said, send me a shirt. So he did, and I've taken it around with me, and I use it when I'm speaking and show people that what one man can do and stand up and so forth. Well, it turns out now he's marketing the shirts. The governor wants one, and everybody else wants one. He's sold close to 1,000 of them already.
Oh, good for him.
Wow.
Very good.
Yeah.
Hey, that's an amazing story, John. It's very heartening.
Well, it is heartening, but, you know, at the same time, what's going on down there?
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware that a chunk of Arizona has been seized by military squads of drug peddlers?
Well, I had read an article about the fact that they had taken the Buenos Aires National Wild Refuge
in
Arizona.
Yeah, and the feds put up a sign telling the American people
we couldn't go in there.
Go into this wildlife refuge because it's now in the hands of people who will do them harm.
Yeah, I mean,
well, isn't that an invasion of our country by
absolutely.
Another country?
Absolutely. You know, I've been corrected about this. I've been saying that this is the first time in the 234 years of our country's existence that foreigners have seized control of a portion of the United States.
Yeah, that's how I see it.
And I saw a picture of the governor. She's standing next to the sign. She's outraged. There's a local sheriff there. He's asked for 3,000 troops from Obama, not border control experts, troops.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been ignored. I said I've been corrected because during World War II, a couple of the Aleutian Islands way out at the end of the chain were seized by the Japanese. And when the American forces went to get them out of there, they'd already vacated it. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you think this is an unfortunate precedent that's being set?
It is. It's a terrible precedent. I mean, you know, I've been saying during my speeches, it's time to bring the troops home from Afghanistan and Iraq, and I'll bet there are a lot of them, I say, who would love to be down on the border protecting our border. And the people all cheer when I speak. You know, hundreds of people here, hundreds of people there. The sentiment against this illegal immigration stuff is huge, and it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to take our hat off to Arizona for what they've done. They've not only done what they've done, they've stimulated other states. I've been told, and I think it's accurate, that every state in the union is watching to see what happens, and they're going to go ahead and put their own law together, the same kind of law. This, on the news, even tonight, I saw some news, and they were saying that a lot of the illegal immigrants in Arizona are going back to Mexico.
I heard that too, but I heard that they were having difficulty
leaving
because of bureaucracy problems or something.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
They want to register them on the way out. They didn't register them on the way in.
Yeah, right.
You know, how silly is that? Just send them back the same way they came. Just open the border and let them walk across.
Well, the drug problem is worse. The crime problem is worse.
Mm.
The amount of money being spent for housing and welfare and education and so forth is now exceeded $100 billion, according to Federation for American Immigration Reform.
I just saw Nebraska just, I saw this tonight, Nebraska, a town in Nebraska just enforced a law of illegal immigration.
Well,
and, you know, they didn't allow, you know, they've been doing this all
years ago. There was a guy down in Philadelphia, he owns a cheesesteak shop. And,
I remember this guy, yeah. About
he put up a
English
sign
only?
Saying, if you're going to order anything here, do it in English or go elsewhere.
Right.
He just announced recently that he was going to send some money off to Arizona to help them fight this law, this suit from Obama. And if you come down and buy a cheesesteak at my store, a portion of the money that you spend will go to that cause. The thousands of people showed up. They were around the corner. They were waiting online for a long, long time to get to help this guy out, send money to Arizona.
Let me ask you this, John. How do you respond when people say that you're being racist?
Not being racist. My response is simple. I say, look, if somebody invades into your home and demands that you speak his language, that you feed him, that you send children to school at your expense, that you take care of them and so forth, what would your response be? And the response would be, no, I wouldn't stand for that. If somebody invaded my home and made those demands, I'd get them out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay.
Yeah.
United States of America is your home. And that's all you need to say. The United States of America is your home. They have invaded your home.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution of the United States is very clear. It's a duty of the federal government, Article 4, Section 4, to protect the states against invasion. And it didn't say military invasion.
Mm-hmm.
It just said invasion.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 11, 20 million people who've come across the borders. Is that not an invasion? Is that not a duty of the federal government to meet its constitutional responsibility and protect the states against that happening?
All right, John, what is the reason? Why are they not doing anything about this?
Because they want those people on the voting rolls.
Is that what it really is?
That's one of the bottom lines.
Well, they want to make them. They want to give them amnesty.
There was a group out west. It's called the Social Contract, and they put out a booklet, I guess you could say, in 2008. And the title of it was, how many illegal aliens are voting? And they answered their own question on the cover, enough to make a difference. Now you read the text, and the book talks about as much as 2.7 million people, illegal immigrants, voted in the 2006 election.
So they had false Social Security numbers, false everything, obviously.
False everything. Well, they're using the matricular ID, consular ID card that George Bush legitimized. He said he said you could use it for driver's license, open up a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get that done, then you go and you register to vote. And the nice little lady at the registration desk says, oh, isn't it wonderful, we have another new voter. Right?
Huh.
The Service Employees International Union, SEIU.
Right.
Right? Very large, very recent, and very militantly leftist. One of their leaders is a man named Eliseo Medina. And Eliseo Medina has come out practically drooling while he's saying it. Can you imagine 8 million more people voting our way? We can have, see they want amnesty. And
what I can't understand, John, is why are they letting them vote?
Why are they letting them vote?
Yeah, they're not legal citizens. They have no right to vote.
You got it. You're right. But they're doing it not only out west. They're doing it in every state. And there's more of it on the way. And
why aren't they cracking down on this? Why are they allowing them to vote?
Well, they don't let...
You go to vote.
Yeah.
Who's at the desk? Who registers you in?
Right.
Some grandmother?
Yep, usually some very elderly person.
Right. All right. Now, those are the same people working at the city hall or wherever that somebody comes in and he says, I want to register to vote. Well, who are you and so forth? He produces a driver's license. He produces a social security number and so forth. That's all they look for. They don't ask him if he's a legal or an illegal immigrant.
No, that's true. But I thought with these drivers, I guess they don't document anything. You get a driver's license.
They check our list.
I mentioned the matricula consular ID card. That's something that the Mexican government issues. And it issues it in Mexico or it issues it at any one of the Mexican consulates in the United States. And, of course, there are consulates in Los Angeles and in Phoenix. And
right, but that still doesn't give you any right to vote.
Well, yeah, but... That matricula ID, the matricula consular ID card,
right,
was stated by George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
That's legitimate to get a driver's license and to open up a bank account.
Nice.
All right. So the document issued by the Mexican government is being used to get a driver's license. All right. Now, it's very easy to get a Social Security number. So you take your driver's license that George Bush said it's okay for you to get with the Mexican-issued piece of paper, and you go to the voting rolls, and you're on the rolls, and you vote.
Unbelievable.
People said as many as 2.7 million voted in the 2006 election. There were more who voted in the 2008 election, and there'll be more who vote in the 2010 election. And is this enough to swing a congressional district? Of course. Is it enough to swing a presidential race? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. So, you know, this is what's going on. America is being destroyed by people who have selfish motives. The selfish motive is, I want those people on the voting rolls because they're going to vote for me. I'm a liberal Democrat. They're not going to vote for a conservative Republican or a conservative Democrat. They're going to vote for a liberal Democrat because that's what the unions are telling them to do, and that's what their racist organizations are telling them to do. La Raza and Micha and MALDEF and all these other groups that have been formed within our country, they're racists.
Mm.
And you're not supposed to be racist in the United States. And let me tell you another thing. You'll get a kick out of this.
Sure.
I was on a radio show in Idaho. And there's a female and a male. The male co-host is a conservative. The female is a liberal. The local people told me this, said that she's nuts. Anyhow, I get on the show.
Well, they probably think we're nuts too. Since
yeah.
We're
well, the first question was, Mr. McManus, what do you think of that law in Arizona? This is from the gal, and I said, I think it's a good idea. Oh, she goes, this is terrible. I said, well, what's the matter? You don't like it? She said, no, it's profiling. Well, it's not, but she thinks it is, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, well, you don't like profiling. No, of course I don't like profiling. I said, well, then obviously you're opposed to affirmative action.
What did she say to that one?
Dead silence.
Yeah.
Dead silence. And then the guy says, Mr. McManus, that's a great argument. And it is.
Yeah.
It is. You know, we're not supposed to be judging people by ethnic or color or last name or even gender. No, we're not supposed to be judging people by that. we're supposed to be judging them by their worth.
What did you think of Rand Paul's statement there that he got in trouble with, where he wanted to state rights, but he wanted to desegregation, or not or segregation, rather?
No.
What was that all about?
Well, I think that was an unfortunate lapse on his part.
Oh, boy.
He immediately stopped going on radio and television shows. Mm-hmm. I saw a poll recently that he's still ahead against the Democrat who was running for that seat.
Oh.
So, I don't know, maybe he survived that.
I hope so. That was a faux pas, man.
But he makes mistakes. Oh. I've made some mistakes, too, you know.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for many, many years.
Hmm.
And I can go back and remember when I first got started, I would make a dumb statement or something and regret it.
But let's go back to that for just a second, though. I mean, if that is the case, you know, it totally is state rights, I mean, which I understand and I agree with state rights to an extent, but in a case like that, where, you know, you would have states defending segregation, how does that play with the federal laws? I mean, how does that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the feds.
Yeah, that's kind of strange.
You say, you know,
and I
1964, the Civil Rights Act was passed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the Civil Rights Act said it shall be a federal offense for hiring and promotions to use race, color, ethnic background, and so forth. It shall be a federal offense to use those as criteria for hiring, promotion, and so forth. Right now, within a year, and the people who opposed that law opposed it on the fact that the federal government has nothing to say about hiring practices. They didn't say that they were for or against blacks. They didn't say that they were for or against whites. They fought it on the states' rights issue, and they were correct.
Mm.
All right, now, within a year, President Lyndon Johnson altered the law and started affirmative action. And affirmative action said you must use race, ethnic background, and gender for hiring and promotion. So with the law, was a little over a year after the law was passed, they violated their own law. And here's what happened. What happened is that the Civil Rights Act allowed the government to have something to say about hiring practices. It initially said you can't use race, ethnic background, and so forth. And once having decided that they were now in the business, they could reverse themselves and say, now you must use race, ethnic background, and so forth. And you can see how wrong it was in the first place to allow them to enter the field.
Mm.
There's nothing in the Constitution of the United States that says that the federal government shall have anything to say about hiring practices within somebody's company.
Hmm.
So that's what happened. And that's why I said I'm glad to know that this issue in Arizona is going to be fought on states' rights, and I hope that the states' rights triumph. I think they very well might. And if they do, then every state in the union is going to do the same thing, and that's good. And then states' rights can come back and nullify the Obamacare.
Yeah.
It's another issue.
There's so many problems that we see. Illegal immigration being number one. This Obamacare? How are people? Why are people so offended to that?
Because it's nothing about health care. It's about people control. You can go back and you can find a statement from Adolf Hitler. You can find one from Vladimir Lenin saying that health care legislation is the entree to total government.
Oh.
Right? And it is. I'm holding in my hand here. I saved this because I thought it might come up on this show tonight. I'm holding in my hand here a list of 159 new boards and commissions that will be functioning because of Obamacare, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have boards and commissions that will empower them to go into your home, go into your workplace, go into everything that you have, and determine whether or not you are having employees under stress because that might be a health problem. You might not be feeding your children what should be fed, the federal government and so on. It's people control. And the more Americans begin to realize that this Obamacare is people control, then the chances of getting rid of it and voiding it are going to grow.
Do you think, John, though, that it's a problem that many people that don't have access to good health care in this country? And there's socialized medicine in other countries, and that works very well in Canada.
Oh, it does work very well. You still got Canadians coming down to the United States to get care that they can't get because they have to get online for 6 months.
Well, those are very wealthy Canadians.
Well, that's right. The ones that can afford to come here are the ones who and the ones who go and they say, I need an operation. Well, get online 6 months from now. You can come back and we'll take care of you. Half of them die in the process.
I was going to bring it up as an article tonight, but in England, they shut down a lot of the services for a lot of the health services, National Health Service.
Right.
They stopped doing because of cost cuts.
That's right.
They've stopped doing things like knee surgeries and eye surgeries, things like this. They're not doing them.
That's right. That's the answer.
Yeah, I mean
the sheiks from Arab countries, the wealthy oil barons, where do they go for medical care?
Come here.
They go to the United States.
But I can't afford the kind of care that they get.
Well,
I don't have access to it.
You can't afford the kind of care that they get is because the government got involved in this in the first place. It's close to half of the rising cost of medical care in the United States is because of government. Because of government forms and government requirements and so forth, and also refusal to protect doctors from fraudulent medical malpractice suits. The doctors have to buy thousands and thousands of dollars worth of insurance to protect themselves.
Well, that's true.
And then in order to protect themselves, when you go down and you say, look, I got a sore knee, well, they put you through an MRI, they put you through an X-ray, they put you through this, they put you through that, the bills go up, 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 up. When before, they would have given you an ice pack and said, go home and come back in a week and let me know how bad it is.
Yeah.
All right? Now, you said that there's a lot of poor people in this country that don't have health care.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. That's true. But the condition health-wise of the American people is better than it is anywhere else on earth. And I'll stand by that. And it's going to get worse. Now, I know I've talked to some doctors, and the doctor said, if this thing goes through, I'm out of this medical profession. I'll find something else to do.
Well,
and the young people that are thinking about going to medical school, there will be fewer of them going to medical school. There will be fewer doctors. There will be rationing of medical care. There will be what they call a single payer, and the single payer is the government. And when the government gets involved in something, look out.
But they won't be. They've pulled out that option.
Well,
it's like public options. So it's like
want it. They want it, and if we don't get rid of Obamacare soon, they'll get it eventually.
Well, I don't know. Personally, I think that was probably made sense. All right. Hang on one second. We still have a little bit to. Hold on. Okay, we continue now.
Into it. They deported the Department of Education and the Carter administration, right? And the more money they put in, the worse it gets. Now, the Carter administration discovered that we were importing 30% of our oil. So they started the Department of Energy, and they poured tens of billions of dollars into that, and now we're importing over 60% of our oil. Right? Then they got into the housing business. All right, they got Fannie and Freddie. Fannie and Freddie are going to cost the American people $1 trillion all by themselves.
Yep, and you know,
brought on the recession.
And you know,
right, so they failed education, they failed energy, they failed housing. We want to turn over medicine to these people?
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta,
are we crazy?
I can understand your fear, but, you know, just going back to the housing aspect, the Freddie Mae, not that Freddie Mac, rather, Fannie Mae, in their new financial reform bill.
Oh, what a mess that is.
They didn't even touch Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac.
They ignored it.
They ignored it 100%. It was like, that was probably, and I saw recently that 97% of all the mortgages in this country are held by the government.
Right.
Actually, not held by, but are insured by anyway, through Freddie Mac
abolished.
Right.
Never should have been started in the first place.
Yeah,
you
these CEOs are making millions of dollars a year.
Sure, they're all in the high six figures.
Yeah. You get a kick out of this, John. That new Dodd-Frank bill that they've written for the financial
regulation.
Yeah, it's 2,319 pages. I can't imagine anybody would read it. And the Glass-Steagall legislation that was so successful.
The Obamacare bill is 910 pages. You know?
Was 17 pages.
Right.
At least, people would have a chance to read it and look at it.
Yeah,
in the Constitution of the United States, you can read it in an hour.
Right.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know that I always.
Well, I told you this
question.
Already. I told you that there's 159 new boards and commissions that will come into existence as a result of Obamacare.
Well, that troubles me because I think that part bothers me because I think it's about obfuscation when they do things like that.
Well, these are programs to enter your home, invade your home, invade your business.
Let's one more thing. What about this revelation here about the intelligence community? You got 845,000 people now. All right, involved with the national intelligence.
Yeah, they're collecting intelligence, right?
Yeah.
Well, what they should do is get out of Washington. There's not much intelligence down there.
No, but I mean, what do you think of this whole homeland security thing,
there's been a lot of unemployment discussions. There's unemployment in the cities of America. There's unemployment here, and there's unemployment there. There is no unemployment problem in Washington D.C.
Well, not in the capital area. Yeah.
They have added, 400 or 500,000 new employees since Obama took office?
But, it's still one of the poorest cities in the country. It's got, it's got a 70 or 75% black population.
All the big-ticket people live in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Or they have a nice brownstone.
The wealthiest communities in the country is Montgomery, Maryland. Montgomery County, Maryland, and then you go over and you got Fairfax County in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Be well-to-do communities.
Right.
Many federal employees.
Well, they always referred to all those highways around Washington as the beltway there as the African bypass.
Yeah.
That's what they always called it.
Mm.
All those phony conservative organizations down there, we call them the beltway bandits.
There you go.
Well, they do. And fundraisers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, money, I'll take your cause to Congress.
Yeah, right, huh?
If they laughed themselves on the way to the bank. Right.
Boy, we're all easily fooled, John. Yeah, I think when you want something done, you have to go out and do it yourself.
Exactly.
Mostly, you have to take some responsibility.
Right.
And I certainly admire that piece in you. I don't always agree with everything that you have to say, but I like the fact that you go out and talk about it, and you're a person of action, and I admire that.
We go to the people, We don't believe in lobbyists. We want the people to lobby with their own congressmen, their own senators.
Hmm.
That's the John Birch Society's way of act. It's been that way for almost 52 years now.
Yeah. I hope that you. I'm trying to think of what else. A couple of more questions here, but I where do you think this is going to go, John? Where do you think the Tea Party is going? Where do you think?
Well, let me first of all say that the Tea Party, the Campaign for Liberty, the 9/12 movement, which is the Glenn Beck people,
mm-hmm.
the the Tenth Amendment Center, all of these different groups that have sprung up, I'm delighted. I'm delighted to see it happen. What they've done is they've got a lot of people off the couch.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, a lot of those people that are off the couch are now saying to themselves, what's this all about? What's the bottom line here? Why are these things happening? And they're coming to the John Birch Society. They're saying, well, you people have been at this a long time. You probably got this all figured out. Help me. I want to know what's happening.
But how about Glenn Beck? You agree with Glenn Beck's
opinion? Oh, no. I've never seen the show.
Oh.
Never seen the show. But I do know this.
Yeah.
A lot of people tell me what he does on the show.
Hmm.
And a lot of people that I think are pretty sound thinkers, they're saying he's doing a lot of good. He's talking about the book by Edward Mandel House that started the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, there are things he has brought up which are true.
M. Stanton Evans, the man who wrote the book exonerating Joe McCarthy,
mm-hmm.
he had him on his show, and that's, to me, that's gutsy.
Mm-hmm.
That book, incidentally, by M. Stanton Evans is tremendous. Anybody who reads that book can no longer have the dim view of McCarthy that everybody's been given.
What was the name of the book again? The
book's name is Blacklisted by History.
Oh.
Great title.
Blacklisted by History, okay.
The man who wrote it is a friend of mine.
Hmm.
He told me 6-8 years ago that he was working on this book, and I said, good, go get him. And he kept working and working. I wondered if he was ever going to finish. Well, he did finish. The book's almost 2 years old now.
Hmm.
But he had a guest appearance with Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck was very kind to him, very friendly with him, and agreed with him that McCarthy's name has been sullied unjustly. You know, I was on a TV show one time. I think it was on C-SPAN, and there was a liberal gal there, and she said, oh, you sound like a McCarthyite. I said, well, what's the matter with that? She said, well, McCarthy, you know, everybody knows McCarthy was terrible. I said, what did he do? He said, oh, he blackened the reputation of a lot of innocent people. I said, oh, well, if you feel that way, obviously you can name some. Please tell me who. So she started telling me about the Hollywood movie producers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, the Hollywood movie producers were being investigated by the House Committee on Un-American Activity. McCarthy was a senator. He didn't have anything to do with that. And the blacklisting of those people was done by the industry, the movie industry. It wasn't even done by government. So you're wrong about that. Now you want to try again? Just shut up.
Well, I'm surprised at that. I know he was blacklisted by them, but didn't this committee have anything to do with it?
No.
With the pressure to put it in
the they did. They called a lot of them before them, and they asked them, are you a communist? And they all took the Fifth Amendment. But the blacklisting of them and the refusal for them to work in the movie industry was the work of the movie industry.
I didn't realize
that. Anything that government did. And it certainly was nothing that McCarthy did.
Hmm.
All right, now, there's just a little taste of what you'll get if you want to read the truth about Joe McCarthy in the book Blacklisted by History.
So he really was blamed for a lot of things that he was...
Oh, his name became a common noun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And McCarthyism is it's in the dictionary.
No, I know.
And it's supposed to be unjustly smearing somebody who's innocent.
Hmm.
Well, that's what's happened to the John Birch Society. Unjustly smeared when we're innocent of all the charges of anti-Semitism and racism and crackpot and kook and like the Klan and like the Nazi, all the things that have been said about us.
There is an open letter, by the way, that I don't know if it was written by, you? I forget. I know I read it. It's up on Google, actually. It was an open letter regarding the defense of the John Birch Society and what had happened to you guys.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Wait. Where is it on the? Is it on your site or is it on?
I wrote an article called "The Truth About the Smear, the Unwarranted Smear of the John Birch Society."
Right.
I wrote that. I don't know, 10-15 years ago.
Right. And it was a good article. I mean, it was a good letter. I thought it was an open letter of some sort.
Okay, well, effectively it is an open letter, right?
Right.
We want people to read it.
Right, and it's where and can people.
I'd like to say to people today, what's it going to take to get you to be concerned about your country?
Hmm.
Your country's been invaded.
Hmm.
You're not doing anything about it. You've got this Obamacare, which is people control, not medical control. You've got undeclared wars taking American lives, raising the chances of us being attacked by terrorism even more so every day. You've got all these things happening, and you're relying on the people that are in power? Is
yeah,
it time to make a change?
That's a troubling thing. I agree with you. And, you know, John, I can hardly wait to have you on again. The time always flies when you're with us because you're so informative and so quick.
Oh, yeah.
And,
we appreciate it.
And we really appreciate all the information you give us.
Well, my pleasure. And I'll come on with you again. We'll do it every once in a while.
All right.
We'd love that, John. Take
okay.
care and continue talking.
Thank you. Oh, continue talking? You want
out to the world.
We're not done?
We are.
Yeah, we gotta get going, but we do appreciate having you on, and we want everybody to go to jbs.org.
JBS.org, or you can call us 1-800-JBS-USA1. We're glad to hear from anybody.
All right.
And thanks, John.
Thanks so much, John.
Okay, my pleasure.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
That was John
McManus from the John Birch Society giving us their view.
All right. So, yeah, that was John McManus. Hope you enjoyed that article, that interview. Again, there's a lot of issues that need explanation, and John has his explanation, and he's very articulate. I wanted to mention too again, be very interesting. Go to jbs.org, and check out their site. But also, I highly recommend that you check out John's letter. I believe it was on Google. You can look that up, or go under John McManus, possibly. I forget where it is. It's been so long since I read it. I've known John now for quite a number of years, probably 4 or 5 years that we've been talking to him and the group. And I want to, and I appreciate their input. Appreciate the people in their group. Not that we agree fully with what they say, but they don't agree with us either. But we sure try to. We respect them, and hopefully they respect us. So I want to thank you, and look forward to tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we're going to do. We're going to go a little different. I'm going to do videotape. Part of a videotape, if we have time, for the whole thing. But I want to get into David Icke's new theory about physical reality and the holographic aspect of that. I found it to be fascinating, and we'll discuss that further. But that's on the agenda for tomorrow night. So and possibly something else. Thank you for joining me, and good night.